Virtue is resisting the lie of the world and saying, yes, Christ is excellent. Yes, I want him more than anything else this week. And that is our purpose. That's what Peter says first in this list. He says, first, you got to know your purpose. And first, you have to live in that purpose. Because if you don't, everything else you do in the Christian life is going to be off kilter. And that's really what we're going to talk about this morning, is how everything else is out of whack if we don't get this in the right spot and if we don't divine it correctly. So as we walk through this list that Peter gives us of gospel growth, of faith to virtue, virtue to knowledge, we're zooming in on virtue and we're talking about what it is and how to live in it. And then we're going to just start walking through it over and over again. So our gospel growth point this morning is the reason we add virtue. So why add virtue? And really, how do we add virtue? So to get started, I'm going to tell you a little story about a man by the name of Herman Bethke. Herman Bethke is a plate spinner. Anybody ever seen a plate spinner before? Okay. I looked for like just a succinct video to show you of this, and you're just going to have to go and look it up yourself. Go look up plate spinning this afternoon. A plate spinner is someone that his occupation is to stand in front of people with a probably 8 to 9 skinny little sticks like you see behind me and take glass plates or porcelain plates and get them spinning on top of them and try to keep as many of them spinning as possible without any of them falling while the audience looks on and oohs and ahs, right? So what it generally ended up looking like as I watched these videos and watched it over and over again was this man just frantically running back and forth, constantly watching every single plate to make sure that none of them were falling. And most of the time, there were like 3 that were like that one right there that he's trying to get back going again. Like, it's like, whoop, 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 and he's spinning it and trying to watch it while also keeping an eye on all 8 other plates, okay? It's actually really humorous. And I bring that up because if we aren't careful, this idea of virtue can become like that. To where we think, okay, I'm supposed to, my purpose in the Christian life is to display and develop the excellencies of Jesus Christ. Okay, great. So that must mean Bible reading, right? And so we get this plate and we spin it on top of a pole. We're like, great, I've got my Bible reading going. We're spinning it, keeping it going. But then somebody comes along and they tell us that we should probably go to like an accountability group so that people can pray for us. So we're like, okay, a community group, great, I'll go there. And we take another plate and we start spinning it. And then somebody tells us about gospel growth and it's early, right? And so we take a plate and we're like, whoo, whoo, whoo. But while we're doing that, our Bible reading over here is like kind of wobbling a little bit. So we got to go over and spin that. So we work on our Bible reading a little bit. And then somebody comes along and tells us about evangelism. So we're like, oh, okay. We look at the plate. We look at the 3 others. We're like, all right, here we go. We get that thing going. And while we get that thing going, we spin the Bible reading and we go over and we spin the accountability group and community group. And somebody else tells us about 1 Peter study on Sunday afternoons. And we're going to do an inductive study of the Bible. And you have no idea what you're doing. You're like, oh. And that one takes a lot of work and you're really spinning that one. And then all of a sudden, somebody tells you about holiness and fighting sin. And another plate goes up. And somebody else tells you about fasting. And all of a sudden, you are running back and forth frenetically in between each plate, trying to keep them spinning with all of your might. And if we're not careful, all of those vital things, all of those important things even, can become this place where we expend all of our energy. And if we don't have the right understanding of what we're doing in each of them, we'll spin them all, and every spin that we do, we'll look at them, and we'll smile and look at the crowd and we'll say, I've got them all going. Maybe just for a minute, but I've got them all going. And we look at the crowd and we want people to see, look at everything I've done. And look at what I've got going on up there. I just witnessed to somebody, or I just read my Bible all week, and we just keep spinning all of those plates. And if we don't have the right motivation at the bottom of it, all of that spinning is for the wrong reasons. And we miss our purpose. So the question is then, why? Like, what is the goal of virtue? What's the reason for all of it? And how does the reason for all of it allow us to keep everything in the proper balance? So the first passage I want us to look at is Philippians 1, 9 through 11. This is Paul's prayer for the Philippians. He says, "It is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment." This is that idea of you would know love in your heart to the fullest. And this goes, you could trace it back to live in your purpose. "So that you may approve what is excellent and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ, filled with the fruit of righteousness that comes through Jesus Christ to the glory and praise of God." So what is the reason behind being filled with the fruit of righteousness? What is the reason behind living in our purpose? The ultimate reason is, you tell me, what is it? It's the glory of God. The ultimate reason for living in our purpose is to glorify God. It's the ultimate reason that we do everything in the Christian life. But if this isn't the heartbeat of virtue, we will become extremely, extremely lost. We will miss everything that God is trying to do. So let's go all the way back to this purpose and let's see this. The purpose of virtue is to glorify God. That is the purpose. It's the main purpose. It's the ultimate purpose. If that purpose isn't there, anything we do at trying to develop and display the excellencies of Jesus Christ is worthless. It's to glorify God. So what does it mean to glorify God? Okay, we get this idea of just a guy like, this is what it means to glorify God. Like, yes, close your eyes, hold your hands up. I am glorifying God right now. Right? It's kind of like one of those real intangible concepts. What's it mean to glorify God? Somebody help me. What's it mean to glorify God? What do you think? It's more than that. That may be glorifying God, but there's something more to it than that. Anybody got any ideas? Praising him, okay, yeah. Reflect his character, very good. Ah, yeah, give credit. So really we get this idea of to reveal or make clear the glory of something. So if something has glory, to glorify it is to show off that glory. So God is already glorious, right? We do not, by glorifying him, give him something that he doesn't already possess. He is infinitely glorious. He is the definition of glory. So to glorify him means to reveal or make clearer the glory that he already possesses. So your purpose on this earth is to develop and display the excellencies of Jesus Christ so that you can display and reveal how glorious and beautiful that excellency really is. So that's our purpose. That's our purpose. So what were you made for? You were made to display the excellencies of Jesus Christ for the glory of God. That's what you were made for. And this is more than just a purpose like picking a major. So virtue is just like a major you can pick in college. You're like, I don't know, I think I'm going to do humanities for a little while. And then I'll probably decide on virtue. That's going to be my purpose. Okay. It's not just like this list where we're like, you know what kind of purpose, like a really good Christian lives in the purpose of virtue. No, it's like the purpose. So if we get this right, if we understand this purpose and why we live in it, then it motivates us. It's like why we were made. So you fall in sync with this and you say, yes, things are right. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. You feel in sync. If you get this right, you have fuel to continue to do it. Spinning plates so people can see, there's no fuel in that for you. Because the minute one of them starts to wobble, what happens? You're in despair. A plate crashes and all of a sudden your world falls apart. You botch something in holiness or your walk with the Lord and all of a sudden the world starts to crumble and you start to get irritated at people. Or when people don't notice that you're spinning all of these plates, you look at them with contempt. Don't you see all of my plates? What, you're giving me another plate that you want me to spin? Hello? You see how this, like, if we get this right, if everything we're doing in the Christian life is ultimately to display the excellencies of Jesus Christ for the glory of God, then that actually gives us fuel Because what's happening? Because God is at work in us to do that. It's not us working it up. It's actually God energizing us to glorify him. And that's what we're going to see today. So the goal then is glorifying God. That is the goal. Now, where do I get this from? Well, it's all over the New Testament. But a couple of places that this is very clear is in a passage we've already started to look at. It's in 1 Peter chapter 2. So do you remember what Peter said? He said, "You are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a people for God's own possession." So God owns us that we may proclaim the excellencies, there's our word virtue, of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Now look at what happens in this passage. What happens is when we know that, there's motivation and there's fuel to glorify God with our lives. So once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. You weren't even a people, but now you're God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. All of these things are happening. Verse 12 says, "Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." So what's happening? Motivation, fuel, purpose, so that those that speak against you as evildoers may see your good deeds and glorify God. So, I mean, just think about this for just a moment. What God has done is he has not just set us apart from sin. He's set us apart for something. That's what this verse is saying. It's saying that we weren't just called out as a not people into just this world of nothingness. We were actually called out from sin for something. We were called out for God's glory. That's what we were called out for. So, I mean, I put this picture up here because it's not like we're in this world of darkness and God just plucks us out as a light bulb and takes us up to heaven to be with him forever. So we're taken out of darkness. We're taken out of darkness through what? The light of the glorious gospel of Jesus Christ has shone into our hearts. So how does salvation work? Salvation works not by us just being removed from the world so we no longer are here, like we're just a dead light bulb that God takes to heaven to be with him, where all dead light bulbs go, okay? He shines his light into our hearts so that then that light would shine out of us into the world. We're not just set apart from something, we're set apart for something. We're set apart for the glory of God. So salvation then, salvation is why we glorify God. So you're blank on your sheet. We glorify God because he saved us. That's why. We live for his glory because he saved us. He's reset our purpose. Out of darkness, light is the way the reformers used to say it. Out of darkness, light. So how out of darkness? Light. Light shines in. Because we are saved to glorify him. So 1 Corinthians chapter 6 tells us this, that we are not our own then because we've been bought with a price. So you are no longer your own. You've been bought with a price. You've been saved. The redemption price has been paid for you. So, what's the next word? Glorify God in your body. I mean, simply, we are not saved and heaven is given to us and the wrath of God is removed so that we can continue to be ourselves. We are saved to be his and his alone. So I found this picture of a branding iron that has a cross on the end of it. Like, you know, farmers are out in their field and they want to declare which cattle are theirs. Again, I'm talking about things that I have so much experience in, okay? As you can tell, I'm a rancher from way out in Tooele. I think there's ranchers out there. There are ranchers in Tooele. So to declare which cows are yours, and this is before like GPS chips that they click in their ears, all right? Before they would do that, they would take a hot piece of metal and they would brand the cows with their signature or their initials or whatever to declare that this cow is mine. So if it wanders somewhere else, it will always be known that this is my cow, right? So when we have been brought into this marvelous light of the gospel, been branded by God to be his in this world, so we are not our own, therefore glorify God in your body. So as you go about in this world, the things that you do with the body that is not your own anymore, display the excellencies of Jesus Christ. Glorify God. So what you do with your body, what you do with your time, what you do with your eyes, what you do with your hands, where you go with your feet, all of those things are meant to give glory to God. You catch that? See that? Okay, it comes because of salvation. So we glorify God because he saved us. But there's another part to this goal. So how does it work out? Well, it works out this way. We glorify God by showing others a life that only God can produce. That's huge. So we show others a life that only God can produce. So there's lots of different ways to think about glorifying something. So if it's something tiny and you want to talk about the intricacies of it, you make it huge. So there's a computer company that just released this brand new tiny computer. And it's like one of those computers that you just, if you're a nerd, you look at and you say, wow. Okay, and I'm a nerd. And so I look at it and I say, wow. And what they did in this computer is they took all of the big components and they shrunk them down to a third of their size before, and it's beautiful. And you know how they advertise it? They take that tiny thing and they put it huge. So if you see a commercial for it, it's zooming in on this thing that's actually about that thin. They're putting it huge on the screen so that they can magnify the greatness of something. Now that doesn't work for God, does it? We don't magnify God, because God is not little that we need to make big, right? You magnify little things to make them big. What do you do with big things that seem distant? What do you do with them? You telescope them, okay? So our purpose in this world is to telescope the greatness of God, that because of the sin of this world, because of darkness on this earth, people have difficulty seeing, right? So God has given Christians to be these telescopes all throughout the world, where we say, God is glorious. Look up. Look. Look through this telescope to what you could see on the other side. Those glories are there. All you have to do is look into this. And what do we look into? We look into our bodies glorifying God in this world. So as we live in our purpose, our lives are a telescope to the watching world to say, look at this life right here, because this life is going to show you the greatness of God. Now think about your life this last week. Was that your purpose? Look at my life. If you look into my life, you can see the greatness of God. Just look right here. That is virtue. That is virtue. So we begin to see in the New Testament, this verse that we looked at just a moment ago. So what is this verse saying? Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. What is that verse saying? That verse is saying this, that as we live in God's purpose, there are things that are going to step on our life. People are going to say things that are going to step on the field of your life. They're going to walk right into your zone, baby. Anybody have anybody walk into your zone this week and step on the field of your life? Anybody? You are in my zone, buddy. Yeah, that's my area right there. And you just walked right in. Welcome. Okay? That's what we do in our heads. So the question is then, in that field, will there be a landmine? So someone speaks evil against you or brings pain or difficulty into your life that you did not cause. The question is, where are the landmines? Because normally in people's lives, there are landmines just waiting for somebody to like step over the fence into someone else's zone and click, boom, right? And sometimes it's a slow burn where people's faces turn red And you see them later on in the day and they're sitting at their desk and they're just like, I'm fine. Or it's like a meeting, you know, and somebody said something and all of a sudden somebody was all like, whoop, 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 whoop. Somebody says one thing, steps into their zone, landmine, and like, whoop, 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 whoop. You ever seen that? Yeah. So what Peter is saying here is this. He's saying that when people step into the landmine zone of your life, there is such God-ordained change in your life. You are living after the purpose of displaying and developing the excellencies of Jesus Christ, that when they step into that, when they traipse in, when they drive a stinking tank into your landmine zone, they do not find landmines. They find good works. That's what God's doing in your life and changing you. He's not changing you just so you'll look good on the outside. He's changing you so that when people come into your life with evil or when evil runs into your life, that they will look and say, there's no landmine there. What happened so that then they will glorify God. So what are we doing? We are showing others more than just a phrase that we are Christians. See that t-shirt? Sometimes we think, well, I just got to tell as many people as I can that I'm a Christian so they will know us by our t-shirts. They will know we are Christians by our t-shirts. So if I could just tell as many people as possible that I'm a Christian, then that will display and develop the excellencies of Jesus Christ. And it's way more than that, isn't it? I got to get me a shirt like that because it's like one of those just like in your face. Because you've all seen the other ones, and I have a few of them. Because if they will know us by our t-shirts, then we should probably stop wearing that one. Facebook, Jesus, add as friend. Horrible. Okay, this one. You to be. God wants you to be saved. Also horrible. They get worse and worse. Jesus, and it says, sweet Savior, King of Kings. Bad. And my personal least favorite, this one's horrible. Heavy drinker, if any man thirst, let him come unto me and drink. So we have to get past this idea. We have to get past this idea that if we could just tell people that we're Christians, then that will be enough to display the excellencies of Jesus Christ, because that is not it. We've all seen people that talk about how they're Christians. But when something rolls into their life, there are landmines everywhere, right? So what we see here is this gospel work of God in us, this gospel growth changes us to the point that when evil comes in, when difficulty comes in, it's not just that we say we're Christians, it's that they can see it by our good works and glorify God in heaven. And our word is validated. That's the idea. So the goal is Christ-likeness. We glorify God because he saved us. And then we glorify God by showing others a life that only God can produce. Do you realize that only God can make you into a person that's reactions are right? That's only God. Anybody can wear a button that says, I am a Christian. Anybody can buy one of those t-shirts. Do not. But anyone can buy one of those t-shirts and wear it. But the only thing that could change you from the inside out so that when evil comes against you, you are able to respond in Christ-ordained love is the one who's been changed by the excellencies of Jesus Christ. So you see Christ, he's going to the cross. You start to watch him. People are ripping him to shreds, both literally and figuratively. So before people are mocking him, there's a trial going on. It's a mock trial, and Christ sits and doesn't utter a word as people malign his character and lie about him over and over and over again. And guess what? Not a single landmine is hit. So we begin to watch, and Christ, as a sheep before its shears is dumb, so he opens not his mouth, and he's whipped and beaten for crimes that he did not commit. And in love, he endures. And we have trouble saying, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? I was wrong. So you know what we need? We need the excellencies of Jesus Christ worked out in us so that we can show other people, telescope his glory. Look in here. Look in my life right here. Because if you look in there, you're going to see God, and he's amazing. But there's something that wars against that. And the thing that wars against it, the obstacle, is you. You are the obstacle to glorifying God. So here's what we have to understand. So there's this thing that gets in the way. Every time we want to display this virtue, you get in the way. Sorry, you do. And so do I. So the temptation can be to be a telescope, but draw more attention to the beauty and the shininess and the really, really good-looking telescope rather than what it's looking at. You ever seen that before? Look at how shiny my telescope is. Look at how awesome all of this stuff on the outside is. And so we spend our time shining up the telescope so that it catches people's eye and be like, wow, that is a telescope. I've never seen a telescope like that before. I mean, you are an amazing telescope. And you're like, I am. Yes, that is exactly right. Now, let me remind you that what's most important here is that you notice the telescope and not the stars of the infinite galaxies that are available to you. Just look at this right here. Anybody ever struggle with that? Yeah. So the obstacle is glorifying self. So your blank under that is this: our selfishness pursues excellence for its own gain. So this is corrupt. So what God is doing and wanting to do, we can grab for ourselves and say, I will use that for my own gain. Oh, yes, Lord. Yes, I see what you're doing. You want to do something in me so that I can show other people how great you are? Well, let's focus on me. And so all of our pursuit of virtue, all of our pursuit of displaying the excellencies of Jesus Christ is just so that we can shine the telescope of our lives. So this is such a corrupt motivation. And Jesus wars against it over and over again with a group of people known as the who? Pharisees. So Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, really most of the Sermon on the Mount, or you could say all of the Sermon on the Mount, is addressed to the Pharisees. So, hey, you think you're doing something awesome by shining up the outside of your telescope with your good deeds that you just want people to notice? You've missed it. Beware of practicing your righteousness before other people in order to be seen by them. And what does Jesus say? If you do that, if you focus on the telescope rather than showing people the greatness of God that it's supposed to do, then you will have no reward from your Father who is in heaven. He goes through giving to the needy. Sound no trumpet. I am giving to someone. We don't have trumpets. We've got Facebook statuses, Twitter feeds, and group text messages. Hey guys, can't come, really busy today, going to feed the needy. Post, and you just wait for the likes. Retweet, favorite, yes. You have no reward. And that's it. If you do your good works to be seen by men, you have your reward right there. Like a virtual excitement from someone who probably accidentally hit the button with their greasy thumb as they swipe through on their phone. Whoops, like, oh man, I'll just leave it. Probably encourage them. And so Jesus says this, hey, great job, great job, great job. There's your reward right there. That's it. That's it. So I want you to hear this. If you take what Jesus wants to do with your life in making you into an excellent believer to display his glory, and you make that about yourself, that's what you get right there. That's it. That's what we get. Temporary like, it's gone in no time, and it's over, and we have no reward. Beware, Jesus says, beware. But it's amazing. Isn't this the temptation? I mean, isn't this the temptation? Over and over again, look at me, look at what I've done. Look at me. I mean, I just did this. Hey, direct attention to me. Beep, 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 right? over and over again. That's how we live. And that is why Jesus is so serious about this. Beware. You have no reward. You show people how good you are at doing something, there's your reward right there, because that's all you will get. You have no reward. So I think Jesus wants us to live in our ultimate purpose, to display his glory. There's one final thing I want you to notice, and that's this. The other obstacle in glorifying self is this. When we pursue excellence this way, we do it in the wrong way. So if you pursue excellence this way, all you're doing is working for something that isn't going to fix anything in the end anyways. That's what's happening. Put all this energy into cleaning the outside of something so people will notice it shining up the outside of the telescope, but it doesn't even work at displaying the greatness of God because we focus on the wrong stuff. So Jesus, again, speaking to the Pharisees in Matthew chapter 23, he says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you are like a whitewashed tomb." So you've cleaned up the outside of a coffin, which outwardly appears beautiful, but within are full of dead man's bones and all uncleanness. So you also outwardly appear righteous, a shiny telescope to others, but within you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. So what's Jesus saying here? He's saying that if you focus on cleaning the outside of the cup and not coming to God and humbly saying, there's something wrong with me, not just what I do. If you keep working on just trying to externally look like you have it all together and not let God come and change your heart, you are just like a cup that hasn't been cleaned on the inside. You've worked really hard to shine up the outside, and even you've gotten some of it clean. So you fill that thing up with water and the inside is a mess, but the outside looks good. You've worked so hard to get the outside looking shiny and nice, and all of a sudden someone comes and bumps the cup. Bumps the cup. What comes out? Nastiness. Ever seen this? Someone that their whole life has been spent building up this external, beautiful facade, but they've ignored their heart. They haven't taken their heart to the only one that can change them from the inside out. They've ignored it. And what happens when you bump them? All of a sudden, they are monsters, right? Because God hasn't changed their heart. So virtue, then, is God changing us from the inside out, to the point that God changes us so that our insides are clean, so that when we're bumped, when they speak evil against us, they may see our good works and glorify God in the day of visitation. That's the purpose of virtue. The purpose of virtue is not so that we can line up this beautiful list of clean people and say, look at all these clean people, really shiny telescopes. Look at them. No. The purpose is that God would change you from the inside out, so that people would see the telescope, but they wouldn't see it for the shiny outside. They would see it for the fact that they can look into it and see the greatness and glory of God that is available to them. So this week, here's a question I want to ask you. If that is your purpose, if your purpose is to glorify God by developing and displaying the excellencies of Jesus Christ, virtue, right? If that's your purpose, what have you been doing with your telescope? Have you been just trying to shine up your telescope? Or have you been seeking to say, look here, here's God. Look here, here's God. I want to show you the glory that is on the other side of this little eyepiece right here. Otherwise, we just stand in front of the telescope, right? Or the lens cap's still on. We look inside and there's a telescope. Are you? Are you one that God has made into someone the greatness and glory of God, or are you someone that's just so busy shining your telescope, you've made it all about you?